unwavering sacrifice. Make you the hero we'll remember forever. Your blood was spilled, but it nourished my roots. I then became a tree with many fruits. The fruits are love, courage, and resolve. You've made me a soldier, so you I salute. Your way I follow, oh my hero. Follow, oh my hero. Unbreakable soul, unstoppable power. Until the last breath, you never surrender. Unshakable faith, unwavering sacrifice. Make you the hero we'll remember.
Welcome back once again, dear listeners. I'm Masuma and you're listening to Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. It's a pleasure to have you with us. We're grateful for your continued companionship throughout the day. We now return to profound and inspiring topic with Like Muhammad, a program centered on the life and character of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him and his progeny. Each episode presents key dimensions of Prophet's exemplary life, spiritual, social, political, moral, and educational, offering timeless guidance for every listener. Following that, we invite you to explore the art of meaningful living with A to Z of Life. Sister Zainab James introduces an Islamic Iranian lifestyle drawing from Quranic verses, prophetic traditions, uplifting poetry, moral parables, and thought-provoking stories to illuminate the path toward a balanced and enriched life. Then stay tuned for Spotlight, our daily roundtable that highlights and examines some of the most significant and pressing events of day. With the insight of two expert guests, this segment offers informed commentary and analysis on current and often debated issues. And to conclude the hour, we turn to The Last Savior. In this thought-provoking program, different scholars delve into the topic of the occultation of the Imam of the Age, may God hasten his reappearance. They will explore the culture of waiting and introduce the vision of a global revolution led by the promised Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance. Up next, it's time for Like Muhammad. We invite you to stay with us.
Muhammad is my guide, Muhammad is my teacher, Muhammad my beloved Rasulullah.
I want to be like you.
Like you.
In everything I do, Ya Rasulullah.
I want to walk like you, talk like you, read my Quran just like you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters who are listening to IRIB English Radio. This is the show Like Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. I'm your host, Muhammad. We're continuing our discussion about verses that are about Prophet Muhammad in the Noble Quran. The verse that I'm reading today is verse 59 of Surah An-Nisa, which reads, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَطِيعُوا اللَّهَ وَأَطِيعُوا الرَّسُولَ وَأُولِي الْأَمْرِ مِنْكُمْ فَإِنْ تَنَازَعْتُمْ فِي شَيْءٍ فَرُدُّوهُ إِلَى اللَّهِ وَالرَّسُولِ إِنْ كُنْتُمْ تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ ذَلِكَ خَيْرٌ وَأَحْسَنُ تَأْوِيلًا. O you who have believed, obey Allah and obey the Messenger and those in authority among you. And if you disagree over anything, refer it to Allah and the Messenger. If you should believe in Allah and the Last Day, that is the best way and best end result. So, when you obey the Prophet, the verse is telling us we have to obey Allah first, we have to obey the Messenger second, and we have to obey those who have been vested with authority among you, okay? Which are the Imams, the infallible Imams, according to us Shias. Okay, so as you can see, we have a hierarchy here. First, we have Allah at the very top, then we have the Prophet, then we have the Ulil Amr, the Imams. Okay, so when you are obeying the Prophet, it is just like you are obeying the Messenger. How would we know how to obey Allah? Is it possible to know how to obey Allah if we did not have Prophet Muhammad? Of course, we wouldn't know. Prophet Muhammad is the one who introduces us to Allah, right? So if we don't know who Allah is, we can't obey him. So we have to hear what the Prophet has to say about Allah. And we have to accept the words of the Prophet. The same can be said about the Imams, the Ulil Amr. If we obey the Imams who have been, you know, they have been appointed by the Prophet, and the Prophet had received the instruction from Allah, it is as though Allah has appointed all of the Imams. If you obey the Imams, it is just like you have obeyed the Prophet and Allah.
To be with you.
Allahumma salli ala sayyidina Mustafa ala habibika nabika Mustafa. Allahumma salli ala sayyidina Mustafa
Mustafa.
You're listening to Like Muhammad from RIB English Radio. Okay, so we said that we have to obey Allah, the Prophet, and the Imams. And this is a hierarchy that if you do not obey either of these, which is Allah, the Prophet, or the Imams, it's like you are not obeying any of them. Okay, so if you want to obey Allah, you have to obey the Prophet and the Imams. If you want to obey the Prophet, you have to obey Allah and the Imams as well. Okay, and then the verse says, and if you disagree over anything, refer it to Allah and the Messenger. If you should believe in Allah and the Last Day, that is the best way and best end result. So, if there is anything that we don't know, like we don't know what to do, we don't know, for example, a law that we have to practice, right? So what we have to do is that, should we just think about it and come to a conclusion based on our own thoughts and views and opinions? No. We have to refer it to Allah and the Messenger. So when you refer something to the Prophet, it's just like you're referring it to Allah. This is what the verse is trying to say. And then it says, if you should believe in Allah and the Last Day. If you don't do this, it's like you are not believing in Allah on the Last Day. It's not. It's just like you're a disbeliever, basically. So if you don't refer a problem that you have in religion, if you have a problem, if you have, you don't know what to do, and it's a really important thing, you should refer it to Allah and the Prophet and see how they deal with the problem. What is the solution according to them? If you don't do that, if you don't refer your daily, problems to Islam, to the Prophet, to Allah, to the Imams, it's as if you have not even believed in Allah. Okay? So this is really, really important. Another thing that this verse is saying is that Islam is a religion that encompasses everything. You know, it's not a religion that is confined to a specific area of life, and it's not involved in all the facets of life. No, it's not like that. Any problem that you have, it says, فَإِن تَنَزَعْتُمْ فِي شَيْءٍ. It doesn't say fi shay'in that is has to do with Islam or has to do with religion or has to do, with like the Prophet or the acts of worship and what have you. No, it says in anything that you disagree, you have to refer to Allah and the Prophet. And at the end it says, that is the best way and best end result. If you want to find a good solution to a problem, because, someone may come up with another solution, but it might not be the best solution. So if you want to find the best solution, you have to refer to see what the Prophet and Allah has to say about that problem. For example, someone, if they don't know what to do with their inheritance, their relative has died, their parents have died, and they don't know how to distribute the remaining wealth, the inheritance of that person among the different family members, should they see what Islam and the Prophet says, what the Quran says, or can they do whatever they want? Like, there's a fight between the members of that family, between the brothers and sisters, and the mother or the wife and what have you. How should they deal with this problem? They have to refer to the verses of the Quran. See what, the verses of the Quran say about inheritance. It says that what the sons receive of that person, for example, if a father has died, what the sons receive is twice of what the daughters receive. The issue of inheritance has been explained in verse 11 of Surah An-Nisa and the following verses, how, يُوصِيكُمُ اللَّهُ فِي أَوْلَادِكُمْ لِلذَّكَرِ مِثْلُ حَوْضِ الْأُنْثَيَيْنِ, and so on and so forth. So the idea is that if you encounter a problem in life, most of the time you can find the solution in Islam, in the Quran, and in the Ahadith of the Prophet. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Like Muhammad. I leave you in the care and protection of Allah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Be like Muhammad, live like Muhammad, see like Muhammad did. Be like Muhammad and live like Muhammad and give like Muhammad gave. Shafi.
When the whole whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, donating salary. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z here on IRIB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously, so donating salary, it seems very specific what I'm going to be talking about. And indeed, I'm going to be mentioning a couple of examples, one from one of our martyrs of the Holy Defense, another martyr of sort of service, of national service, and this idea that it's this idea of a quite high level of generosity where, you know, we don't just give like what we have in excess. This is a sort of thing we maybe do in just as a matter of course. We maybe some of us even, and obviously I know examples of people who will go through even like their what they have in their houses, you know, their kitchen goods, their clothing. They will sort of take stock on a very regular basis and see, okay, well, what do I have here? Do I have more than I actually need? And then really just take everything that is even slightly in excess and donate that. And even maybe with their salary. But obviously, what I'm talking about is something that goes beyond that. And I'll just start with one of the martyrs from the Holy Defense, the name of Ibrahim Hadi, I think would had received salary, because obviously he was already in active duty on the front in the Holy Defense. And it was found that he would then sort of give the money and then tell a friend to go and basically pay this money to a certain family or families back in Tehran. And these families, it was said, were very worthy, very good, very pious families, but obviously in very harsh circumstances. So, you know, these are soldiers who just gave their salary to other people, basically. Welcome back to A to Z here on IRIB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously I've just mentioned the fact that I've just mentioned one of our martyrs from the Holy Defense who would donate his salary to needy families. And for sure, this one martyr was not an isolated case. This is the sort of behavior that for sure we would have seen in many of the martyrs of the Holy Defense. And for example, we also see in other martyrs, and one of the martyrs of sort of service, of national service, former president of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Shahid Raisi. He had, for example, he for three years was custodian of the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza, but didn't take any of that salary in those 3 years. And instead he asked that it be used to build clinics on land owned by the Holy Shrines. So these are just a few examples. So, you know, is this something we can replicate? And obviously imagine yourself, this is very difficult. And by the way, I think this is also behavior of another martyr of who indeed had served in the Holy Defense, was not martyred during the Holy Defense, was martyred just 5 years ago, Shahid Soleimani, who had also been giving, donating his salaries to other people. So what can we take from this? And obviously people have families, people maybe have mortgages, have rents to pay, but what can we take? So can we maybe just take some lesson from this? is there a way for us to be more generous? And obviously I'm talking more about the, you know, obviously the material benefits that we have. Can we donate more, especially in these times now with what's happening in Gaza? So this is just, a question, maybe just a reminder for us to reflect on this. What can we do? Are we actually doing enough? And this is a huge question, obviously. So I pray that we do reflect on this, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on Arab English Radio with me, Sister Zainab, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
bring us down from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, France, a country marked by a violent colonial past, is also a country plagued by a myriad of contradictions. A young female Iranian academic, Mathia Isfandiari, who's never had as much as had a parking ticket her entire life, is now languished in a French prison for 210 days for posting pro-Palestinian content on social media. Now, this as French President Emmanuel Macron continues to criticize Israel's genocide in Gaza, its settlement expansion in the occupied West Bank, has made a French declaration of recognition of Palestinian statehood at the UN. And if that doesn't scream hypocrisy and duality, let's visit Article 11 of the French Declaration of Human and Civic Rights, which states the free communication of ideas and of opinions is one of the most precious rights of man. Any citizen may therefore speak, write, and publish freely, except what is tantamount to the abuse of this liberty in cases determined by law. This ambiguity is what defines today's France, its policies, and continued detention of a young girl thousands of kilometers from her family and homeland. And this is a topic of your Spotlight program. But first, here's a report.
210 days have passed since the illegal detention of Iranian academic Mahdia Isfandiari by French authorities, a case that continues to spark international outrage and concern. Isfandiari lived in Lyon when French security forces raided her home on February 28th without prior notice. She was taken into custody, denied access to a phone, and held in solitary confinement for over 50 days. Officers also stripped her of her hijab and subjected her to prolonged isolation. Her family described this as a case of hostage-taking, saying the officers arrived unannounced, bundled her into a van, and held her without charge.
There have been no court hearings yet, and she is under a psychological pressure. They took away her hijab from day one.
For an entire month, French authorities refused to provide detailed information to the Iranian Foreign Ministry, which intervened at the family's request. Tehran has consistently called for her release, labeling her detention as unjust and politically motivated.
What has happened to Ms. Isfandiari is an arbitrary detention and, politically speaking, a clear case of kidnapping. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs has made significant efforts to help secure her release. Her so-called crime is essentially supporting the oppressed people of Palestine.
Isfandiari faces accusations of advocating terrorism for involvement in a Telegram channel that denounced the genocidal war on Gaza. Investigators allege she acted under Iran's influence, claims that her lawyer has vehemently denounced as unfounded and purely political. Human rights advocates, neighbors, and supporters argue that the case highlights a troubling erosion of free speech in so-called Western democracies. They believe that Isfandiari's case highlights blatant disregard for human rights and the absence of genuine freedom of expression in the West, including in France. While Paris publicly defends Palestinian rights by recognizing Palestine and condemning civilian casualties in Gaza, Isfandiari's prolonged imprisonment starkly reveals a troubling double standard.
We adopted a credible plan to put an end to the war in Gaza and to save so many lives. We've charted a course towards peace.
As global attention intensifies around Isfandiari's detention, the critical question remains if France will continue its contradictory policies or take steps to secure her release.
And now for our guests. Joining us, Charlotte Case, a political activist and international coordinator, joining us out of Beirut. Amateur Saeed Shah, author and commentator, joining us from Belfast. Hello to the both of you, and a pleasure to have you both on. Welcome. I guess we'll do the gentlemanly thing here, Charlotte, and start with you. Your initial thoughts, please. Why this young girl has been treated like this, Ms. Cates, an academic who was snatched up in shocking and rather caustic fashion, initially denied from notifying her family, treated like a terrorist. French authorities told no one, and it wasn't ultimately until the Iranian embassy got involved and made relevant phone calls and exhausted a bunch of resources until they finally located her.
Unfortunately, while this case is horrifying, it is far from surprising, particularly as we have been witnessing in France over the past 2 years, but of course not just in the past 2 years, over the past 77 years of Zionist colonization in Palestine, a systematic repression and targeting of voices that stand for Palestine in France. For example, George Ibrahim Abdullah, who was recently liberated in Lebanon, was freed after spending over 41 years in French prisons, really at the behest of the United States and Israel, as well as of the French imperialist state. You know, France has consistently, despite these recent words about recognizing Palestine, what we have seen consistently from France is the arming of the Zionist regime, support for the Zionist regime diplomatically, politically, militarily, and by all other means, continuing military trade with the Zionist entity, and at the same time, engaging in an all-out war on freedom of expression. For example, we saw the forced dissolution and banning of organizations like the Collectif Palestine Vaincre, the largest organization in France advocating for Palestinian rights and liberation, Urgence Palestine, is currently under threat of being banned by the French state. There have been hundreds and hundreds of cases, even members of parliament who have been called in for police questioning. Others have been detained. Others have been sentenced for so-called apology for terrorism, for doing nothing more than expressing in public the fact that Palestinians under international law have the right to resist their occupation and the right to resist their occupiers through armed struggle, and that this is a right that is guaranteed under international law, and that the Palestinian resistance is carrying this out. And so, you know, the case like we're seeing of Mahdia Esfandiari, where you're seeing a young woman who is a scholar, who is involved in speaking out about Palestine simply by writing and posting on a Telegram group, is part of the systematic support of Zionism and genocide being carried out by the French state through repression at home in an attempt to shut down the growing movement in solidarity with Palestine.
All right, very well put. And thank you there, Charlotte. Mr. Saeb Shah, thank you for your patience there, sir, and welcome to the program. And your initial take, please, on Mahdia Esfandiari's plight.
Hello to you, to your guests and audience. This is, as your guest said, it's not surprising, but it's happening all over Europe and the United States of America and Canada as well. The global north try to suppress the voices of the resistance. We noticed that in the student movements in the United States of America, and against activists in the United Kingdom and in the North Ireland as well. There is an activist who are very vocal and well-known, and journalist who is committed to defend the people who's gone under the genocide. They're trying to silence them. And in here we can see what is the you called the double standards of the French trying to champion the cause of recognizing the state of Palestine, they are championing the cause of Palestinian capitulation in here. That's what the French are trying to achieve and to do with what is Macron and the West European countries, including the United Kingdom and the rest of them. All of them were genocide and still genocide enablers, and all of them trying to, in what all of this new wave of recognizing or joining, I call the global north, global south, and recognizing the state of Palestine. Recognizing what the state of Palestine, what about the rights of the Palestinian people to live, to exist, while they are going through genocide. You didn't see any move from all of these voices in there to impose sanctions, to stop arming the Zionist entity, to activate even the EU law of partnership and supporting the Zionist entity in a trade. So it's all kind of double standards and smoke screens to make sure the Palestinian will surrender to the Western kind of vision, or Trump, a new vision and a new plan for the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, which is they want to beef up the Zionist entity, sustain its existence on historical Palestine while destroying the Palestinian kind of ability to exist as independent in their own territories, even in the West Bank or Gaza Strip. This is part of the game, and the voices of the activists, the voices of Mahdiya, and the voices of the people who are saying the truth and calling the spade a spade have to be silenced in here.
Thank you, there, Mr. Shoth. And Charlotte, what do you make of these Western countries so eager to teach the rest of the world manners and democracy and the Bill of Rights and human rights, when, by the way, many of these values and principles originated on this side of the world before they got over to that side of the world? But these are teachings they all find so laborious themselves to follow.
Well, I think it's quite clear. If it wasn't clear, I mean, it should have been clear to all. The Western imperialist powers have a tremendous amount of blood on their hands and were created through the plunder of people's resources, of people's destinies, of people's futures, through the enslavement of Africans, in many cases through the genocide of indigenous peoples. And right now, what we've been seeing for the past 2 years in occupied Palestine, with the full-on, all-out support of all of the Western imperialist powers, funding, arming, and supporting Zionist entity, and continuing their collaboration and complicity in genocide through domestic repression, targeting, labeling organizations as so-called terrorist organizations when they are in fact advocacy organizations supporting Palestine, or resistance organizations engaged in a legitimate armed struggle for the freedom of their people. All of these things are full-on complicity in genocide. If there was anybody who had any illusions left about the rights of France, Britain, the United States, Germany at all to lecture the countries of the global south about human rights, democracy, and freedom, this should be completely gone at this point, because it's very clear that those who are defending freedom in the world are those who are standing with Palestine and who are fighting to bring this genocide to an end. So, you know, it is the people of Palestine, the people who are holding steadfast on their land, the resistance forces that are continuing to fight. It is the brave people and armed forces and Ansar Allah movement in Yemen who are continuing to live up to their responsibilities to take action to bring this genocide to an end. To the people who are fighting for freedom and resisting in Lebanon, in Iran, in Syria, and throughout the region, these are those who are defending human rights and democracy. I mean, the organization that I'm international coordinator of, Sami Dune Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, has been banned in Germany, designated a terrorist entity in Canada, called a sanctioned by the United States, is being threatened with bans and dissolutions in the Netherlands and Belgium. And why is this? Simply because we're speaking out for Palestinian prisoners. In Britain, Palestine Action, which has done incredible work to cause material damage to arms manufacturers, manufacturing the weapons that are being used by the Zionist entity to carry out this genocide, has been proscribed and labeled as a terrorist organization. And there have been over 1,000 people arrested and who are being charged with terrorism offenses by the British state for doing nothing more than holding up a sign that says, "I support Palestine Action and the genocide." So there shouldn't be any illusions anymore. It's very clear who is defending freedom in this world, who is defending human rights and democracy. And those are the resistance forces who are every day confronting the Zionist imperialist genocide.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I want to actually change gears and talk about Emmanuel Macron. Actually, I can't talk about Emmanuel Macron because, Mr. Saibchat, so many French are struggling to survive these days. Over 15 years of austerity measures, crippling costs of life. I mean, they came out for the last couple of weeks in multiple cities protesting government mismanagement and runaway cost of living. And then Macron hits them, his administration hits them with this new package of cuts to social spending, and then when they come out to protest that, they get hit with batons and upside their heads. And this is a government that supposedly prides itself on being one of the leading advocates of human rights on the planet.
We remember when the French Revolution was some of this new kind of war order created after that, with the bills of rights and the how people, poor people, and the what they called at the time the bourgeoisie should rule and should eliminate monarchy. Suddenly, it's become an empire. You know, they changed. Bonaparte imposed himself as the emperor of that revolution, and it went to invade all over Europe and even to Palestine and Egypt. At the time with the French campaign. So it's all hypocrisy that is the West giving us. It's all imperialists, and it's all looting and conquering land to benefit the wealthy. And we noticed the French election, the last French election, Mélenchon and the French strong party won the election, they left. Where are they from ruling France till today? They deny them from even enjoying their own winning at the ballot box. And where is the French democracy in here? Today or yesterday, the former president of France, Sarkozy, went to jail for corruptions and for a lot of things. Nasty stuff they were involved in. And Macron is not that far behind him. And all of these people, they stole the rights of the population and the working class in France for many decades. And the last colossal one was the extending of the retirement age. They stole 5 to 10 years from people's lives and their savings. So this is the way they are. And we seen them when they went, the French as well, on the attack on Libya. And after that, they expand their own colonial army to go to Mali and to the West Africa, and looting the gold and looting the wealth of these countries and the uraniums, and impoverish these countries to make France live on the back of the Africans. Till today, this is happening, and they still looting the resources. And at the same time, they come and lecture us about human rights.
Mm. Back to these contradictions that we're mentioning. Another one, this passion that Emmanuel Macron shows Charlotte, and that he presents himself to be so concerned about the fate of Gazans amid Israel's genocide. He recognizes a Palestinian state, while this young girl sits in a jail cell for being critical of the occupation herself. So please help me understand this. Either free her or join her, but this, of both of you being of the same narrative, and she's incarcerated, and it's okay for you to stand at the podium and cry crocodile tears for Gazans, it's not really a good look, is it?
It's not a good look, but unfortunately, it's not the same narrative. Your guest was saying just a short time ago, what Macron is trying to do with his so-called recognition of a Palestinian state, which we must note is not actual recognition of Palestinian statehood, sovereignty, and self-determination, because it is a conditional recognition based on the recognition of the Zionist entity. It is based on actually, under the framework that Macron presents, any state of Palestine must be undemocratic. It must exclude the resistance organizations that the Europeans and the United States and the Zionists label as so-called terrorists. So it's building in a lack of democracy into this recognition. The recognition is not of a state with borders, with control of land, with control of territory, with control of its economy. They want to make it so-called demilitarized, which means essentially what they actually want is a state that has a so-called state that might have a title at the United Nations, but has no control over the Palestinian people's land, future, and destiny, not just from the river to the sea, or even in the West Bank and Gaza. That is not on the agenda of Macron. What Macron's plan is actually about is trying to save Zionism from what he and others in the European Union view as the excesses of Netanyahu and his particular Zionist line, along with Trump. They're trying to save Zionism through the so-called recognition of a Palestinian state, and that's why their rhetoric at the United Nations is not backed up by imposing an arms embargo on the Zionist entity, by withdrawing their ambassadors from the Zionist entity, for calling for the banning of the Zionist political parties that are responsible for continuing to openly advocate and support for genocide, for that matter, for seeking the arrest and prosecution of Netanyahu and Gallant and shipping them to the International Criminal Court. France isn't doing any of that. It's not taking any meaningful action to stop the genocide, but where it is taking meaningful action is by banning organizations working for Palestine in France and arresting and imprisoning people of conscience such as Ms. Bahdia Esfandiari.
And I appreciate you getting to the fine detail. I was hoping you wouldn't, because you're very accurate about that. And that is really, we've opened that can up. We could talk about it forever. We need to have a spotlight titled The Sincerity and the Nuances of These Recognitions. I'm very glad you actually touched upon that. But I'm going to put that also right over to Mr. Saeb Shaath. How do you perceive Macron's so-called position, this girl's plight, how there's really no congruity to the two of them, and the nuances that Charlotte was mentioning, the contradictions in the recognition itself?
You see, what the wave recently, and I can see it, witness it from maybe less than 8 years ago, the alliance between Zionism and fascism in West Europe, which is to follow suit with the what's happening in the United States of America with the Trumpism and all of that, the fascist group. And the French, by acts like that, when they arrest an activist, especially from Iranian descent, in a way they are appeasing the fascists and appeasing Trump as well. And they show and send signals to the Iranian as well, as long as the Iran is not engaged with them in the levels with what they want, from the nuclear program to the war in Ukraine, because they accuse Iran of standing behind and supplying the Russians. To all of that is a game to appease Trump and all his bigger game. And at the same time, the recognition of the state of Palestine goes as well with the Trump new plan, designated, as I said, to create a Palestinian kind of surrender to them, capitulation to them. And all of these countries who's from the global north, France, Portugal, United Kingdom, Belgium, Canada, Australia, etc., are the main backers of the Zionists. If we listened a few weeks ago, what the UK Starmer conditional recognition of the Zion of the Palestinian state, when he framed it as in a way which it sounds is a punishment for the Zionist entity if it didn't stop the extermination rather of the Palestinian, and rather than acknowledging the Palestinian rights or recognizing their national struggle for this over 80 years to liberate themselves from what the British Empire created. So it's all hypocrisy, all of them, which they claim they got the values which they govern the world order today. They have no claim on moral high ground whatsoever.
And we're almost out of time. I really want to get this last question to Charlotte. Charlotte, French contradiction, one last one here. Let's visit their constitution. We earlier mentioned in my lead, Article 11 of their so-called French Declaration of Human and Civic Rights states, the free communications of ideas and opinions is one of the most precious rights of man. Any citizen may therefore speak, write, and publish freely, except what is tantamount to the abuse of this liberty in cases determined by law. So if a particular lobby pushes for a particular restriction and they have a strong enough legal team they could put on it, that's how easy it is to compromise it in France, Charlotte. The so-called free speech, you can easily turn it into very expensive speech, as we have seen for this young girl.
Absolutely. I mean, when we look at the history of France, we are looking at the history of colonialism, imperialism, plunder, and exploitation from Haiti to Algeria to Vietnam, and certainly to Syria and Lebanon and throughout the region as well. And so we're seeing that same kind of colonialism being carried out against the Palestinian people and against all who stand for Palestine. And so when we, you know, look at the history of France, despite the slogans about liberty, equality, fraternity, freedom of expression, the reality of that history and the reality of that present is one of violent crushing and suppression of those who fight against imperialism and those who fight for freedom, even when that fight is being carried out simply by words and expression and demanding an end to the genocide in Palestine.
Thank you both sincerely for joining us on the program. Time has gotten the better of us. Charlotte Cates, they're joining us from Beirut, and Mr. Saib Shah, they're joining us from Belfast. And thanks for tuning in. This brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your Spotlight program. Stay safe and goodbye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با
صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد. اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us the sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
You are a true God.
To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You are listening to The Last Savior. This is your host, Zainab Askari, and we have had the pleasure to be with Dr. Ali Alavi today. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And we are really glad to be with Dr. Ali Alavi to gain more insights from him on the topic of Mahdawiyat. Well, we have been discussing the characteristics of the special companions of Imam when it comes to the behavioral and practical aspects. So we discussed the simplicity. We also discussed the simple life that their appearance and their life when you actually enter into their lives does not have any difference. It's simple like the way it is. They are serious. You also expressed their seriousness. And then we talked about the wilaya centeredness, and now who would want to you to give us more characteristics of these special companions?
Well, one of the other characteristics and features of the companions, let's say the special companions of Imam Ali Salam, is their discipline and organizational spirit.
Right.
This is what we are going to talk about today. Yes, as you rightly mentioned, we talk about their simplicity, their simple life, their seriousness, and their wilaya-centeredness. Now it's the time to talk about this feature of the companions, special companions of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
Okay.
So everyone knows and approves that order and discipline are fundamental requirements for the capability of any military organization. The command headquarters of Imam alayhi salam government possesses ironclad discipline, logical order and organizational spirit. So I want to say this organization has these features. I mean, these people are really well-disciplined people, and they are actually equipped with an ironclad discipline. And this organizational spirit is really seen and sensed in the companions of Imam Ali. It couldn't be otherwise.
Right.
Why? Because they are trying and they are intending to bring order and discipline to the world. And they are going, as we said earlier, they are going to lead the world. They are going to be the leaders of different parts of the world and different nations.
And you can't be a leader and if you're unorganized.
Yeah, definitely. And they are going to create a global cohesion among the people, among different classes of people.
Right.
Imam Ali alayhi salam says that and praises this quality of the companions of Imam Ali, and says that كَأَنِّي أَنظُرُ إِلَيْهِمْ وَزِيُّ وَاحِدْ وَالْقَدُّ وَاحِدْ وَالْجَمَالُ وَاحِدْ وَاللَّبَاسُ وَاحِدْ. I seem as if they have the same body and height, their beauty and elegance and their clothes are also the same. I mean, there is sort of unity and conformity among the companions of Imam Ali salam. This beauty usually which is being described here is not necessarily material beauty, but though they are even blessed with this, material beauty as well. But this beauty is more, something that internal beauty, that
right.
when Definitely me and you have the experience of talking to some people that we have this good sense and experience of talking to them, for example, due to the internal beauty that they have. For example, the very high level mystics, or they are special believers that they are very endeared in the eyes of the people.
Indeed.
So they are, the high rankers of those elites of the society.
Right. So, Dr. Levy, we'll discuss more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.